timer starts now. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Forging Worlds. I'm Matt.
And I'm Alan.
And we're back to start our fourth world, Alan.
Crazy. Awesome, but kind of crazy.
Yeah.
This is going to be something radically different.
It's going to be, hopefully, just a real fun time. And we decided not to roll randomly for half of this, right? Mm-hmm. We chose one, and we rolled randomly for the other.
So the modifier that I put forward and that Matt agreed to is high school.
Yes. And we rolled randomly for the genre, and we landed on future.
Future.
We're doing some sort of futuristic high school, and just to clarify a little bit, because listen, while a high school is its own little microcosm of culture and everything, just building a high school, not necessarily four episodes. So we are going to build the entire location of the high school, town, mm-hmm. city, village,
planet,
floating whale in the sky, whatever it is. We don't know.
It's in Monstro.
Damn it. We're not doing Kingdom Hearts, Alan.
Damn it.
We're not.
Asteroid M?
No.
Okay.
No licensed products.
Okay, fine.
Plus, we already did a space station.
We did, and our space station was very good.
Shattered Spire was real great. Okay, so I guess we need to talk about what this all means.
How far removed from now do you think we're talking? Are we talking decades? Are we talking centuries? Are we talking millennia?
Well, the problem with all of this, of course, is the very instant we put a timescale on it, we're already both wrong and out of date.
Yes.
So, we just have to accept that going in.
It reminds me of that, was it Conan O'Brien that used to do, in the year 2000?
I don't know.
Somebody does who's listening, I hope. Well, please, validate me.
You can at Alan on that one. That's a good question. How much future do we want in this?
Do we want, like, immediate future, medium future, far, far, far future? Are humans even still the prevalent species?
I kind of want, like, a century down the line.
Okay.
So, like, we're spacefaring.
In the 2100s.
Ooh, maybe 200 years down the line?
In the 2200s?
Can we do a 23rd century?
Sure, and I will try not to make any Duck Dodgers jokes.
I mean, Duck Dodgers, TOS era of Star Trek, which I guess now includes Enterprise, but also Discovery.
Discovery.
Any of those is fine. We just can't directly reference licensed properties again. That's a no-no. So
the principal can't be a talking duck?
Correct.
What if it's a wholly different talking duck?
Alan.
Okay.
We'll talk about... We do need to cover that, though. Like what we
got. Did any animal species gain sapience? Did they, like, evolve into something more sentient?
So sentience, not sapience.
That's true.
Because sapience, most of them have.
Mammals, yes.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone, the dolphins, if they didn't abandon us before the Vogons showed up.
Right, if they didn't fly away and thank us for fish. Cool. So maybe they evolved out of the water?
I mean, 200 years. Evolution doesn't work fast enough to give them, like, limbs, does it?
No. That would be...
That'd be millennia, right?
Yeah, millennia. That's macro evolution. So we would be looking at micro evolution. So small things that the dolphins could adjust over the course of 100 years, or 200 years in this case...
See, the problem is I don't see them really evolving without tool use. Like, right. Mental capability, sure, but that's also kind of held back because they can't...
They don't have thumbs.
Yeah, they can't experiment with things as much. So maybe not them. I don't...
Really, within 200 years, unless there is human interference
nothing's going to be
accelerated,
yeah,
an uplift, nothing will be uplifted. Now, it may be different. So, like, dogs could have a much longer lifespan. You know, like, there could be new breeds of dogs and cats and things like that. But as far as mobility, I don't think evolution would be able to work that quickly.
I think
without
I think,
help.
Yeah, I think let's go ahead and lock down that for whatever reason. And if this comes up in the course of our conversation, we can address it. No species on Earth has been, or no Earth-born species or species that we've encountered on another planet has been uplifted by human means.
Cool.
I think that works well, just because then, like, because that doesn't really need to be in the story. If we're focusing on a high school, we don't really necessarily need, like, crazy animal uplifting going on.
But one thing that will come up, and you know this is coming, aliens.
Absolutely. Because I very much picture this as, like, humanity in, has become an interstellar species.
Okay, so we have gone beyond the Milky Way?
No, that would be intergalactic. I think we've gone beyond our system. We've gone beyond Sol.
Okay. So maybe we've gone to Sirius?
I think most likely...
Or Betelgeuse? I can't remember which one's closer.
I think if we're going to be a stellar civilization, there's one of two options. Either we have not yet perfected FTL of any sort,
I
or
think that...
near light or sublight. We've maybe sent out, like, generation ships.
I think we've maybe got near light. Because what I'm thinking is, supposedly, when you're actually looking in physics, and I'm probably about to get very boring for a minute, but I'm sorry, listener. So as we approach the speed of light, it simply becomes asymptotic. So we will get infinitely closer to the speed of light while also never actually reaching it.
Well, so, yes.
So I think in the 200 intervening years, we have moved up the asymptote. You know, we are closer to it than, you know, we are far away from it, but it is still unreachable.
Yeah. Okay, well, the other problem with just going at near light speed is time dilation.
True.
So if we want to be like an actually active interstellar species, if we want to be actively moving between systems regularly, we might want to consider subspace.
Yes, subspace, wormholes,
yeah.
Really kind of looking more at a quantum level, like quantum interconnectedness.
I'm thinking, okay, so here's an idea. It still takes a while for ships, even at near light speed, to travel all that way, because even light takes a little bit to get there. What if it's closer? What if we realize that you can't necessarily, we don't have a way yet to penetrate subspace with our ships? Technology went the other route, and we did manage to make, like, basically stargates.
Okay.
So once we realized that we could do that, we set up a gate between, like, Earth and Mars, or Earth and Titan, or Earth and Pluto, or something. And we were like, hey, we can do this, and that's near instantaneous no matter the distance we go within our solar system. Why don't we strip down a ship to make it as fast as we can go, launch it to Sirius with a stargate on it, like a ship-sized stargate, wait however many years. What's that? It's only a couple of years at light speed,
I think it's 2.5?
So let's call it 3 to 4 years to get there.
Yeah.
We wait the 3 or 4 years. When it gets there, it sets up a Stargate. We send a probe through. And ta-da, it's still near instantaneous. And now we can get to other systems. So immediately... Ooh, that's another thing we'll have to talk about. If space travel is corporate or not. Immediately, we send out...
Are we talking about America?
We'll get there. But we immediately send out just, like, fleets of these, like, one Stargate on, strapped to a drone ship and launch them at every system that we can see that's nearby.
Well, let's put a pause on that because I kind of want to talk a little bit about the first encounter. It always bothers me when I read sci-fi and it's like, oh, the first encounter was hostile. And so the Earth went to war with space.
The downside of that is humanity. We're actually pretty shitty as a species.
No, we are. We're an awful species. But what I'm saying is that they were peaceful. Now, whether it stayed that way,
or that's up for debate. Or they recognize that we're basically viruses and or locuses. And well, they're just like, keep you over there.
Or they see us as someone or something to be nurtured.
Ooh, pet project.
Basically. Hey, you've almost got FTL. Hey, fun fact, spoiler, that's impossible. But hey, look at all this stuff that you're doing. This is really cool. Let's kind of trade some technology. Let's send our best minds and like figure stuff out.
And what would be really neat, Alan, is if we found someone that was roughly our same level.
Oh, Matt.
Yes.
The gates open to alternate dimensions.
We found us in other realities?
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's very interesting. That's very good. Can we put a pin in that and use that for like a building block or another go? Like alternate reality? Because I feel like we need to keep this one aliens and not us.
Okay.
We need to put that idea down. That's very good.
I wrote it down.
Okay. Because we need to play with that because that's very, very good. Like that we could do like some Crisis on Infinite Earth stuff and that's mm-hmm. great.
And maybe we called them the teachers.
Yeah, see, if they're just a little bit ahead of us, but in a way that makes us go like, well, we can't take them, and we don't know enough about them to be able to really challenge them, then let's learn from them. Or, and this is another question, like, let's actually, can we put a pin in the alien for a second? So I have another question I think we need to narrow out.
Yeah, I do too. Okay. So you go first, and then... I'll go with my question.
Listeners, I'm sorry that we're kind of both seeming a little frantic right now, but we're both tired boys. And
we are very tired boys, and our brains are scattered, but it's making some good popping off of energy, so...
Yeah, this is actually a lot of fun. So my question is, what's the state of humanity on Earth?
Cool, that was my question, too.
Okay,
are we still multiple countries? Are we a United Federation of Planets situation where the world has come together and we have kind of a global council?
Here's my pitch.
Have we thrown capitalism into the fire? Like,
here's my pitch. So my overall pitch, the overall, like, the ending point of this is humanity is more or less some sort of utopia. And like
I'm
a good
all
one.
For an actual utopia, not a dystopia.
Yeah, like an actual good one utopia. We nailed it somehow. And here's how I think we nailed it.
We started listening to each other?
No.
We stopped killing each other?
No. We went the Roman route, which means one dude got real powerful and real pissed off and basically burned it all to the ground and just took over.
Okay.
And this person did it right. So this person did not go with hereditary succession and basically made it a criminal. Like, if you try to put your child on the throne, you and the child are both dried out in the street and murdered immediately. you have to choose the best person for the job. So it is the ideal that was more or less the second century in Rome, which was the reign of the five good emperors. And the only reason that that reign didn't really continue is because Marcus Aurelius, unfortunately, had an idiot son.
True.
Commodus made a lot of problems happen. Anyway, but I think that's what happened. And that
Matt, your history nerd showing.
Listen, I will go on forever about Rome. Forever. I'm very happy about it. It's a lot of fun to talk about. Anyway,
random tangent, but what we should do for a fifth draw is I interview you about Rome.
There are very few fifth draws left, but maybe we can talk about that.
Okay.
So I think that happens like 50 years from our present.
Okay.
So about 150
years. What part of the world
did
this ruler come from? Because I feel like that would heavily influence the type of culture that would result in the aftermath.
Well, here's part of what I think it is. I think, and this is going to sound really, really, really just Western-centric, and I apologize for that, but I think I think right now, with the way things stand, if things continue the way they are for the next 50 years, which, disappointingly, probably, it has to come from a Western nation. But I think the person probably comes from a background where they are either somewhere between first and third generation descendant from immigrants. They studied abroad in a bunch of different places and probably lived abroad in a bunch of different places. So
I have a different idea.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a council.
Well, hold up.
Well, like, let me get there.
Okay.
This person that you're talking about goes to countries that already exhibit the type of things that this person believes will be what leads the world to ultimate peace.
Okay.
So they approach Canada. They approach Japan. They approach the UK, I hope, maybe. But they approach these leaders and say, look, this is what's going to happen. This is what I have in place. Even if you kill me, it will still happen.
You have a choice. You just won't get me. Yeah.
Get in on the ground floor and help or burn.
And see, that's the thing I like, is they have to be that ruthless.
Yep.
And this entire first generation of people, and probably the first couple of leaders, whoever sits on that throne, has to be that ruthless. And what I think happened, like, I dig this idea that he went to a lot of people, he, I don't think it matters.
The
first emperor or whatever went to a lot of people and recruited the right people, the right nations and everything, and built this council and was like, okay, here's a long-term plan. We're going to have a century of this. And what we're going to do over that century is we're going to burn down everything that doesn't work. We're going to fix some world hunger issues over time, fix medical issues over time. And then after the century, we're going to reevaluate and we're going to ease up on the power and slowly shift it over to the council. And I think that in the present day of the world we're making of this high school, the council is now more in control. Like, it's been 50 years that they've been transitioning out of that.
So this is like the dawn of a second golden age.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Like, I think we're like, it's been enough time that the generations that knew about the corruptions of capitalism and all that, and of all the other crap going on in the world.
And listeners, if you are all for capitalism, like, that's awesome. But what we're saying here is that pretty much in every political ideology, there is fault and there is problem. And what we're saying is that this person somehow, magically, futuristically, whatever, is able to distill those ideas down into what would actually work for the people.
Well, and here's one of those, I think we have to have this ideal going forward. And it's kind of the Roddenberry ideal. is that if humankind is shown a better way, if they are like literally either broken down enough that they have to accept a better way, or it is kind of force fed to them that there is a better way, then yes, we can all prosper. Like, straight up. Like, even in Star Trek, there's still bad elements of society and things like that. That's never going to change. Yeah, people are people.
There's still crime. There's still, you know, yeah.
And kind of, I think the freedom of having an out to other systems is that some of those people can go over there and do their thing over there. Like, if you want to be super racist, I mean, please don't. One, like, yeah, think real hard about your life choices. But and in
coming,
the future,
coming from two people that did grow up like around that stuff, you can do it. You may feel so alone right now. You may feel like a lot of what's called cognitive dissonance, where it feels like your brain's fighting itself. That will pass. You can do this.
Just, you gotta want it and you gotta practice it. Like, seriously, it's doable. This is a very good time for our weekly comfort thing. Hey, dude. Hey, you, my friend, you're doing real good out there.
Mm-hmm. You're trying. You're being kind. Keep it up.
And hey, your hair looks good today.
Mm-hmm. Did you do something different with it? Did you put in some pomade?
So, if humankind is shown that a better way can work, we have to rely on the Roddenberry ideal that they will embrace it. That a majority of them will embrace it. And the biggest foundation of that is that basic need does not exist anymore.
Right.
Every need you could want, shelter, clothing, food, and safety, guaranteed, protected. You can get whatever you need at the drop of a hat.
But what you want is a different story.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of the turning point of that. And like this is I feel the kind of society where there are more people following their passions, and there's still enough of that like supply and demand rolling around, because that's not a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly logical, in fact. There's enough of that supply and demand rolling around that anyone can go and kind of experiment and play around and find out what they're good at and pursue it. But it's not just like it is not a society of lotus eaters.
Right. And that's one thing that I actually getting to the high school that I think is extremely important to note. History teaches all this.
Mm-hmm.
History doesn't pretend that the world before this being, this first emperor, came into power. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They want to make sure that everyone knows what that was like, because we don't want to repeat the mistakes of the past.
This is okay. My history nerd's going to show here a little bit, because I think, and this is,
it's okay. I physicsed all over this a few minutes ago, so go ahead.
To borrow a phrase from our buddy and co-creator over on Hard Reboot, Jake, this is going to have to be a little bit pie in the sky, imagineering dreamland here. But I think for this society to kind of be able to really hold to this, there is not a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no forced narrative when it comes to history. Hey, guess what, friends? I don't know if you knew this or not. There were some pretty advanced civilizations in the Americas before white people showed up.
Yep.
And hey, friends, brown people got here first a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, some white dudes got here before the white dudes that we sing all about, but America was not like an isolated, unknown thing. There were some pretty incredible civilizations happening here.
And a lot of that history has been purposefully and
deleted. There is no narrative, but there is truth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as far as anyone has discovered in the history that's told in the world we're playing with here, there's no forced narrative. So there's none of this like, oh, we're going to wipe away these native civilizations in the Americas, or we're not going to talk about the fact that the Egyptians could travel all around the world at will in canoes. It's just truth. Like, as far as we know it, and presented with that caveat, as soon as students are able to understand that, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that were here. this is what happened. And that has to apply to everything. Like,
exactly. It's applying kind of scientific principles to even non-scientific things. So a lot of people, when they think about history, they don't think about evidence and testing things and, you know, theories. But that is still something that's very prevalent in the field of history. So all of this would have the caveat of, cool, if you don't think this is how it happened, go and look. Find evidence. Go and test your theories. Find resources. Research. Dig in. And then come back and share what you've learned with humanity.
I think this is also something that needs to be kind of stated for this imaginary dream world of ours. Knowledge is public access.
Yes, everything.
Everything. When most of capitalism was thrown in a fire by the emperors or the rulers or the hegemon. No, we can't do
one
that.
One of the first things to go was Huffermillon.
I mean, them, like, any corporate claims to knowledge of any kind was taken away. Which is, I think, probably how a lot of things like easy distribution of food, a lot of medical advancements were just like no reliance on fossil fuels, because it was just like, hey, all these patents y'all have been hoarding, they're out there now. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about it. Not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
There's also, fun fact, that's the reason why all cars have seatbelts, is because the person who invented the seatbelt made the patent open and gave it to anyone with a vehicle because he knew it would save lives.
Let's touch on one thing, and Alan, we might talk about this and maybe delete this later. But I think based on how much we've touched on civilization and where we're at now and where we could be for this world, we need to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to figure out how to phrase this. I'm just going to kind of open my mouth and hope I don't sound like an idiot. And again, listener, I am not intending offense at all. I promise. If this sounds bad, it's, you're not going to hear it. So, religion is still there. People are still allowed to believe what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
There are limits placed just on like a human rights.
Oh, there's an actual literal separation of church and state, not just one where people say that there is, but then push any sort of personal moralistic views upon the law.
That for sure. But I think there's also something like, and I am not trying to call out anyone who believes this. I think there has to be some rules in place for humanitarian rights kind of rules where...
So vaccines are mandatory.
Yes. That's what I was trying to get at most of all. Like, if you want to practice that in this future, take your family, take any of those people who you believe it with you, go through a Stargate to another world, do your thing over there. Shoo.
Well, and I mean, this is the future. So, I mean, look at Star Trek. It's literally just a hypo spray. You know, it's put it next to the next, done. A lot of what people perceive as negative additives or negative whatevers that people look at when they see vaccines and get all squicked out, that could be removed because this is magic future world.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely part of it. Like, there's whatever power you believe in willing, humanity has moved forward enough by this imaginary dream world of ours that people can educate themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, that spin, that horrible spin, especially on like vaccinations, that's the thing I'm biggest on. It's like vaccinations and body rights, utterly protected. Mm-hmm. Unassailably protected.
Yep. And that's a big part of basically decommercializing education and knowledge, is yes, that people will have access to it. Now, of course, people can choose to read it or not. People yeah. can publish things as opinion. But anything that's published as opinion must be published with basically a giant This is an opinion piece. No research was done in the writing of this piece, or if there was, how much, and cite sources. Everything is cited. News is cited. Obviously, research in academia cited. Everything is cited.
And again, we both know we're talking Imagineering Dreamland.
Yeah.
We do. And I cannot say this enough, because I know there is a non-zero chance that someone out there either has close family or they themselves believe this. We're not trying to take a pot shot at you.
Nope.
I promise we're not. And if it feels like we are, please talk to us.
Email us.
We don't want you to feel that way. So please feel free to talk to us. We are open to dialogues. We want that. So we are down to about 13 minutes. So we need to talk about aliens. Now that we know what humanity looks like, what aliens look like?
Through a mirror brightly instead of through a scanner darkly.
So we want them to be like way more advanced than us? Or
no.
Just...
Like I said, through a mirror. So it's very, like you said, it's very similar to us, but maybe like three steps ahead.
Okay. So they're actually working on like taking star, we can't call it a Stargate. We can't. Wormhole technology, and somehow turning that into a ship's drive.
Right.
They're about at that point.
And to borrow from yet another thing, it's almost like the Mass Effect drives, the Mass Effect relays.
Okay.
So, you know, it could be that kind of catapult type thing. It could be they are literally boring holes in space-time, which could have interesting ramifications.
It could, but I don't think that's within our purview for this.
No,
this
not at all.
Yet.
Yeah. You know, whatever their version of technology is, it is more advanced than us. But it is obviously steps that we could have taken to get there.
Or can take, yes.
Or can take, or were in the process of taking. You know,
I dig that.
So, and when they come, like I said, they're kind of teachers. They're not super snooty or really superior, because they also see, wow, you guys are close to, like, we are on the same wavelength here. We may be pitched a little higher, but we were where you were 50 years ago. Like, this is in a generation of where we are.
This is telling me kind of what our universe looks like here. One of the answers to the Fermi paradox is that there are plenty of other civilizations out there. They're just close to our level. Mm-hmm. Which means they don't have a good way to contact other civilizations.
And maybe that's what let the wormhole work, is that they had developed something very similar.
And we jumped onto their
connection. And it harmonized.
Yeah. I like that a lot. I think we need two races right off the bat. We have these ones that are ahead of us a little bit. I'd like to make one that is either a little behind us that we stumble onto, like we send a probe out to a system, it sets up the Stargate, the probe goes through, and then we follow through and we discover, they're at space shuttle level.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we do with that? It's either them, or maybe there's three aliens. So either them or a really advanced one out there. Like a forerunner race, but it's still around.
I like that, because I like the idea that maybe even that they have transcended a physical form and they exist as energy.
That's good. I wonder if that's a little too much taking from Stargate and Star Trek, because that sounds like the Ancients and or Q.
Yes, but it is the quote-unquote logical progression, is that eventually if a race is around long enough, it will learn to transcend its physical nature.
What if, and this is a long distance question that will probably have very, very little to do with our world
high school
at all. Yeah, but let's what if civilization goes in waves? And this is the last remnant of the previous wave, and they're just like one race is chosen from each wave to like shepherd the next wave through.
Oh, interesting. I like that.
So,
and they can be called the shepherds.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what humans call them.
And as soon as races make contact with another galactic race, the shepherds start to show up because they're like, oh, you guys are getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this. So I like that a lot. We'll have to figure out how to work this through. We need to move on to our actual topic. So
I was about to say, listeners, you may be wondering how this all ties in. Well, I have two words for you. Foreign exchange.
Oh, Alan, I was so – okay, here's what I was thinking. It's very, very similar. Here's what I was thinking. Mutual colony.
Ooh, yeah.
Like as part of this deal, and maybe this is between all three races. Like,
so the teaching staff is like thirded between each of the species. Yeah, I like that.
So maybe we discovered like the shuttle race 50 years ago, and like the step mm-hmm. below us on progress, we discovered them some time ago, and with agreement from their people and from the more advanced race, and with maybe some questions to the shepherds, if that kind of dialogue exists, collectively everyone was like, yes, let's help them step up the rungs.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have far-reaching – that almost certainly will have far-reaching consequences, because like the Prime Directive in Star Trek is the Prime Directive for a reason,
mm-hmm.
because you don't know what's going to come out the other end of a forced evolution.
One of the best examples of that, for me anyway, is the Yerks from Animorphs.
Yeah.
Like, they literally name a crime after it called Ciro's Kindness. He was kind to the species who he gave them space travel, and then they were like, oh, cool, we're going to enslave the galaxy now.
So I feel like the way this worked is humanity stumbled upon this third race, and they were like, uh-oh, and they called the first race, the slightly more advanced one, is like, hey, friends, help?
We need to have
a meeting. Because y'all did this real well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first race was like, hey, shepherd? Hey, help? How do we deal with that? And then collectively, they're just like, they observed them for a while from a distance. Contact was made with like everyone participating equally. And they were tested out for a while. It's like, are you people going to be insane if we help you up the ladder a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
And I think because we're in the Roddenberry, like, happy, happy, imagineering dream world,
they're chill.
I think it's got to work. Like,
yeah. And we've got to work. We form the first interstellar coalition that we know of.
Of some sort. Like, at the bare minimum, like, a mutual alliance.
Mm-hmm. That includes trade of both knowledge and goods and supplies and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, and I think that all had to happen, like, right when we were transitioning out of the Empire and into more of the Council-directed mm-hmm. civilization. Because I think that transition is part of what led us to go, okay, we can help y'all. We just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And this race that was above us was like, yeah, we were watching humanity for a little bit. They get it, and they're good right now. So between the three of us, we can be better together. And, like, it might even – I think we need to get a little buck wild with these species, but we should talk about that next time.
Yep.
So what I'm thinking is, as part of this, like, pact, three systems were chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Each race chose a system. And we're like, okay, this is the system we're putting forward. This is the system we're putting forward. This system we're putting forward. We'll take point. Each race takes point on one, but they are all mutual systems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no ownership amongst them. It is a mutual system, collectively built, maintained, owned, all that, whatever that looks like, by each race. So I think ours should happen on the one that humanity recommended.
Mm-hmm.
So we found a Earth-like planet somewhere. started a colony, got it going, brought in the other two races, and this is the high school in the main city.
High school on Planet X.
Yeah. Like, I think we should have a different word for that. And because it's humanity out in space, it's probably like Unity or Eden or something like that.
Yeah. It will not be Columbia.
No. No. And probably not New Eden either. Was that the one? Eden Prime. It won't be that
Eden
either.
Prime.
Yeah, no. Mass Effect. I don't want to culturally appropriate, but maybe like Shambhala or Shangri-La.
Hmm.
Just use a different culture name for paradise.
Or just call it paradise. Like Paradiso. Paradiso.
Paradiso's good.
From Dante's Inferno.
I'm fine with that. Because
there was Paradiso. Inferno, Purgatorio, and then Paradiso.
Paradiso, yeah. Yeah, so Paradiso. And this is the high school in, like, the main city there. And it's established enough that it is a proper city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's probably the hub city of this world. Other colonies are, like, other settlements on the planet derived from this city. It's got the spaceport. It's got all that.
Yep.
Okay, so we have 2 minutes left. How big is this high school, Alan?
Well, if it's a colony and it's relatively... how long do you think this colony has been there?
I want to say this happened like 30 years ago.
Okay, so that'd be enough time for at least one generation to go through.
Yeah, I'm picturing maybe a little bit smaller, but with three races feeding people into this.
Let's say maybe 150 from each species, so maybe 450?
450, okay, I can deal with that. It's a little smaller than I was expecting, but I like it.
Well, the thing is, I'm thinking children.
Oh, I'm definitely thinking high school, though.
Well, yes, but like teens.
Oh, yeah, no, like 9th grade through 12th grade.
Right.
American high school. Like, I don't think that's the terminology or maybe even the structure that's used in the future, but there are some things we can't predict. So, mm-hmm. Whatever.
Roughly 15-ish to 18-ish.
Yeah, in that band. So, I think there's got to be a good number of staff.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, I think it would be interesting if the school staff was thirded. So there mm-hmm. are a third from that represents the human species, a third that represents the more advanced species, and then a third that represents the less advanced species. And you have to take classes with everybody. And you take three history courses. You take the history of humanity, the history of the lesser developed civilization, and the history of the more developed civilization. Okay, and you also take three language classes, one for each.
There are
universal translators, but you still have to learn the language.
Yeah, and just
because that's also culture.
Yeah, that's culture. So we can go either, I think, one of two ways. One way I prefer more than the other, where it's 15 people in a class, which would give us mm-hmm. 30 staff. Or 30 people in a staff are in a class that gives us 15 staff.
Nope, 15. Well,
15 students?
Yep.
Okay, so we have 30 staff of some sort, so roughly 10 apiece.
And lots of fun robots.
We can cover that next time because we are rapidly rounding down. We're there.
Roombas. Okay.
Well,
with googly eyes.
Well, put a fork in that for next time.
Okay.
Because we're definitely coming back to this
Absolutely.
Next week. And I'm very excited about it. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to start narrowing down real quick. Like, I think the biggest things we do next time are going to be naming these other races.
Mm-hmm. We had to get the big picture out of the way so that we knew what to focus on. in this high school. Because obviously culture influences education so, so heavily.
Yeah, I think this could be a lot of fun.
I do too.
We're gonna dig into stuff in the next 3 weeks. So, hey, thanks for coming along. Well, I've been Matt.
And I've been Alan. For John.
You can find Alan at Alan_Sells on Twitter. You can find Matt at Matt Hoadley on Twitter. You can reach the show at Forging_Worlds or by emailing us, ForgingWorlds@FifthDraw.com. This show and the rest of the Fifth Draw family of shows can be found at FifthDraw.com. Forging Worlds is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.